From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, we talk about nightmares with Rosemary Ellen Guiley, and in a moment, Altered Genes, Twisted Truth, one of the most riveting stories and books on genetically engineered foods. Wait till you hear this. Here's what's happening. The German wing's co-pilot, suspected of deliberately crashing his plane into the Alps, had apparently disclosed an earlier bout of depression. The airline said last week that Andreas Lubitz had taken a break from flight school training, refused to say why. It has now shared emails from 2009, which showed that Lubitz told instructors he had suffered from severe depression. All human remains, meanwhile, from the crash have reportedly been recovered. That's miraculous. And French authorities say the remains of all the victims had been removed from the remote ravine where the plane went down, but that the mountain troops would return to the scene on Wednesday to search for personal belongings to give to family members. The United States has pledged to tackle climate change by cutting its carbon emissions by almost 30% by 2025. It made the formal offer to the United Nations as a step towards a global deal in Paris in December. A Russian geopolitical analyst, Konstantin Sivkov, has called for Moscow to launch a nuclear attack on Yellowstone National Park and the San Andreas Fault Line, noting that the devastation would disappear the United States as a country. He made these comments in a piece for a Russian trade newspaper, translated by the Sydney Morning Herald in Australia, arguing that NATO aggression against Russia required the complete destruction of the enemy. He went into this chilling scenario, which we've talked about on Coast to Coast before. A Yellowstone supervolcano eruption would kill millions of people in the initial blast and bury much of the United States in volcanic ash. And according to some experts, it could cause the end of the world. The last time a supervolcano exploded, that was in Siberia, 85% of all land species and 95% of all ocean dwellers were completely wiped out. Cal Ory, of course, author of The Man Who Predicts Earthquakes, with us. Cal, we have talked before about Yellowstone, and it is a danger, but if you detonate a nuke in there, would it really kick this into going?
Well, let's just say hypothetically they do send a nuke over there. How do we know it's going to hit a bullseye? We don't. They don't. If it did cause a super volcano, it's going to be, 1,000 times greater than an ordinary volcano. And what you said would probably happen. The scale would be beyond anything known to humans. But also the quake. Let's just go over to that super quake, the San Andreas fault that they want to hit, too. God, I can't believe this guy on drugs or what?
I know it.
But if we did have a superquake, which we probably will one day in California, it could and will probably affect both Northern and Southern California. The San Andreas runs 800 miles north and south. It would kill and injure thousands of people, cause our infrastructure would just be totaled. Fires would be huge, and we would have long-lasting social and economic consequences. Plus, it wouldn't be just California. A lot of people say, good, California's done. Look what happened with the Indian Ocean quake. Look what happened mm-hmm. with Japan. We would have tsunamis. It would be felt throughout the United States. We know the recession we had. We would go into, for the survivors, we would go into a depression. This just, it blows my mind, this person that is thinking this. But, you know, will Russia ever do it? I say probably not. Remember the movie War Games?
Yes, of course.
There won't be any winners. We would retaliate, game over.
You got it right.
So, yeah, it's an awful scenario, but unlikely. I don't think it's going to happen. One of them will probably happen naturally or on their own.
Well, it just points out the dangers of what could happen, especially at Yellowstone. A nationwide blackout across Turkey. The country there has thrown that country into chaos. The prime minister says the nationwide blackout could have been caused by terrorists. They're just not sure yet. The power outages have been reported in dozens of cities out there, and they're just trying to figure out what is going on. A new report claiming that Facebook secretly installs tracking cookies on your computers, allowing them to follow you around the internet even after you've left the website, deleted your account, requested to no longer be followed. Lorne Weinstein with us, expert on the internet. What does this all mean, Lorne?
I wish I knew. This, I was reading this report. It came out of Europe, out of Belgium, I think. And the thing is, you can read this report five different ways. You can turn it backwards and upside down and everything else. So the bottom line is that anything that involves cookies is so incredibly complicated. I mean, because cookies, they can be used for some bad things. This is true. But they can also be used for all kinds of good, completely benign things. And let's face it, when it comes to internet issues, it seems like, you know, 8 times out of 10, the EU is so utterly confused and utterly wrongheaded on these issues. They've got their terrible right to be forgotten. They've got weird laws against even benign use of cookies that cause all kinds of problems. But to be honest with you, when a report like that comes out of Europe, I don't spend a lot of time worrying about it.
All
now,
right.
As far as Facebook is concerned, in this particular case, it's complicated not only because of cookies, but because Facebook has a presence across many, many websites. When you use a like button on a site that's not a Facebook site, for example, but it has a like button, maybe it has a Facebook commenting box, things like that. So without a lot more information and a lot more technical details, I'd say don't worry too much about this report. Obviously, pay attention to what you're doing, pay attention to your privacy settings, use those settings, understand them when they change, but don't go into a panic quite yet.
It's amazing work. Thanks, Lorne. Lorne's website, part of our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com. As you know, on this program, we talk a lot about genetically modified foods. In a moment, a riveting story called Altered Genes, Twisted Truth by Stephen Drucker. It is truly one of the most remarkable works on this subject of genetically engineered foods. Stephen's next with me on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. So sometimes you might not be feeling well and you just had something to eat. Did you know you might be eating something that has been genetically engineered? Let me tell you about our special guest. He'll be with us for the next couple hours. Stephen Drucker, a public interest attorney, now executive director of the Alliance for Biointegrity. He is a commentator on the risks of GE-type foods. He has served on the food safety panels at conferences held by the National Research Council and the FDA and has met with government officials throughout the world, also the United Kingdom's environmental minister and heads of food safety for France, Ireland, the UK, and Australia. And here he is, his work, Altered Genes, Twisted Truth. Stephen, I got to congratulate you, by the way. One of the best I've seen on this subject.
Thank you very much.
How did an attorney get involved in this?
Many people ask me that question. I sometimes ask myself looking back on it. But I first learned about the fact that there was a massive venture underway to reconfigure the genetic core of of the world's food supply back in late 1995, and I was surprised that I hadn't really known anything about it beforehand. It turned out most other people hadn't heard of it either, and I wanted to begin to find out what was going on. And the more I learned, the more I became concerned, and eventually I felt that there something should be done, and I as a lawyer could do something about it by filing a lawsuit against the FDA to try to, in some way, bring its policy into greater line with science and sound regulation. And it turned out that when the lawsuit was filed, the FDA was forced on discovery to hand over more than 44,000 pages of its internal files relevant to genetically engineered foods. And that was a dynamite eye-opener. It demonstrated that the FDA had been lying to the public and to the world repeatedly, incessantly, since May of 1992, that it had covered up extensive warnings of its own scientists about the unique risks of these foods, and it had brought these foods onto the market in blatant violation of federal food safety law.
Jeez.
One of the biggest governmental frauds ever perpetrated by our government, and I think by any government in modern times.
Stephen, years ago, I was in St. Louis, of course, and I spend a lot of time there still. As a public relations executive back around 1982 to 85, one of my clients and assignments was to open up the Life Sciences Center that Monsanto had just built. And I'm interviewing the executives, putting together my information because, you know, we're going to have a lot of media out there at that time. And I said, well, what do you do here? And he said, oh, we're going to work with plants and foods. And I think that's where they did all this. Had to have been. Frightening.
Oh, I'm sorry, George. I didn't understand the last part of that question.
Well, it hasn't been a question yet. It's just I think I was right in the middle of the genetically modified Monsanto work.
You were in the middle of quite a bit of what Monsanto was doing, that's for sure. And they've been doing a large percentage of that work.
Now, when you started researching this, at what point did this really start to bother you? Because I can tell in the book, Altered Genes, Twisted Truth, you're not too happy with government, and I think you think this is pretty dangerous for us. Am I right?
Yes, I make the point that when one actually looks at all of the evidence in total, it's very clear that not only, as the FDA scientists and many other scientists have said, that genetically engineered foods entail a higher level of risk than conventional foods, that level of risk is unacceptable. Nobody should have ever been, no consumer should have ever been subjected to that new amount of risk without very careful safety testing to make sure that the case of any particular product, that risk did not exist. But that the risk of any genetically engineered food is abnormally high, and it's unacceptable, and it's outrageous that a whole slew of these foods was allowed onto the marketplace of the United States in flagrant violation of federal food safety law and in violation of sound scientific principles. And not just here, it's in Canada as well. Canadians have been exposed to these foods for the same amount of time with the same minimal amounts of standards. Well, I should say Canada has slightly stronger regulation than the U.S. We have zero regulation in place from the FDA, but many other countries, hundreds of millions of people being exposed, most of them without their knowledge. There aren't even labels here in North America, and it's a major, major fraud and major violation of many people's rights.
Stephen, how did this get sold to government, to the FDA? How did companies like Monsanto, and they're at the forefront here, how did they sell genetically engineered foods to government?
Well, it's interesting. It, as my book documents, it goes through the long and sordid history of the genetic engineering venture. That genetic engineering, that revolution where scientists were able to begin to reconfigure the genome of living organisms and transfer genetic material between species, overcoming, actually sundering the natural species barriers, that began in the early 1970s, and it was over 9 years from the time that scientists were first able to genetically engineer a simple bacteria before they were able to successfully create a genetically engineered plant. That's not widely known, because the proponents of genetic engineering would have us believe that it's a fairly simple process. It's not, and it was very difficult to learn how to make genetically engineered plants. So in the early days, the main battle was over just genetic engineering of microorganisms. And even at that early phase, long before Monsanto was involved in the game, the scientific establishment had to begin to misrepresent the facts about what they were doing, what genetic engineering, more technically referred to as recombinant DNA technology, entails. in order to avoid government regulation and to keep control of what they were doing themselves, pretty much keep others out of supervising their research, some of which actually entailed very great hazards. And my book documents how at every critical step, disinformation was required, and that actually the main responsibility lies at the feet of eminent scientists and scientific organizations. Had they not misrepresented the facts about genetic engineering, obscured the risks of what they were doing, there would have been adequate regulation in place long before the first food ever was ready for market, but there wasn't, and in fact the burden of proof was illicitly shifted. Because of the laxer regulation that was in place and the push for accepting and promoting the biotechnology industry, big giant corporations like Monsanto were emboldened to get involved and to invest the millions and millions of research, which had the groundwork not been laid, they may well not have done in the first place. But then once Monsanto and others were involved, then they did apply quite a bit of pressure to government, and they were able to convince the Reagan administration that genetic engineering in all of its forms, and especially agriculture, were an important answer mm-hmm. to the nation's economic ills, to its imbalance of trade, that the idea took hold within the federal executive branch and then within Congress itself, that the biotechnology sector was really going to be one of the bright spots in the American economy, allow us to outcompete Asian nations who were beginning to outshine us in many areas of technology, that this was an area that the United States could get an edge in, and that everything should be done to promote the U.S. biotechnology industry, speed its products onto domestic and international markets. And as part of that, the FDA and other administrative agencies were given a directive to promote the biotechnology industry. And the FDA admits that it has an agenda, it has had an agenda and still does, to promote biotechnology. It also, by law, has a responsibility to protect the safety of our food supply.
That's right.
And to apply the law fairly to and uniformly to genetically engineered foods. Unfortunately, its agenda to promote has overwhelmed its duty to protect. And therefore, the FDA has broken the law, has lied to the public, has covered up the extensive warnings of its own scientists about genetically engineered foods in order to promote Monsanto and the biotechnology industry. And it's, as I said, it's a shocking, I would say, crime in terms of an act that really is illicit. It should not have happened. It is morally wrong. It is legally wrong.
And let me ask you this, Stephen. Do you think in the original intent of the company that they thought they were doing good, or was this a plan maybe to make as much money as they could by controlling the seeds and the food crop?
That's a difficult question to answer. Clearly, on the when one is talking about for-profit corporations, they obviously have to be aware and have to be motivated to make money.
Yeah.
And this is clearly a great money-making potential for these foods, because they were getting intellectual patent rights on the new crops they were developing. So farmers don't buy genetically engineered foods; they get a license to use them in a particular field for one growing season. They're licensed these foods just as you or I are given a license to use software. Because basically the company is claiming we have made a revision to the software of this plant. It's our intellectual property. We have a patent on it. And then in the case of the majority of genetically engineered foods on the market today, those that are resistant to an herbicide, the company that owns the patent on the herbicide, stipulates that the farmer has to use, as part of the licensing agreement, has to use that company's herbicide. Well, so that gives it a double whammy. It sells the seed, and it also is guaranteed sale of herbicide, and the profit margin on herbicide is higher than on seed.
Hold on, Stephen. We're going to hit the break, but we'll come back. We'll talk more about Altered Genes, Twisted Truth. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Stephen Drucker with us, Altered Genes, Twisted Truth, and the name of his book. And Stephen, I've interviewed a number of scientists. I'm not one for sure, but you know what? I don't think it's a smart idea to play around with Mother Nature the way they've been doing this.
Well, many people don't. In fact, one scientist that's quoted in the book, his reaction after having many, many unpleasant surprises in trying to genetically engineer plants, said, you know, it's not nice to try to fool Mother Nature. Sometimes you get slapped, and sometimes you get slapped rather hard. Nature's been slapping back a lot. It's just the unfortunate consequences, the weird results are usually suppressed. But it's very difficult for scientists to predict exactly what's going to be happening and to get the results that they want uniformly. And with food safety, what the FDA scientists and many other independent scientists have warned about repeatedly is that there's a risk that there could be unexpected toxins, allergens, or other harmful substances created in the food unintentionally, and that these new substances could be novel and very difficult to detect, and that very careful, long-term, rigorous toxicological studies would need to be done to make sure that any genetically engineered food is not harmful to the consumer. And those studies have not been conducted. In fact, in the United States, the FDA does not require one iota of anything from any biotechnology company. Somebody could dump GMOs on our market without even notifying the FDA, and according to the FDA, they haven't done anything wrong, even though they actually have violated our laws, but the FDA is letting them get away with it.
You know Jeffrey Smith. You've made reference to him in your book, Altered Genes, Twisted Truth. He's out there like you, a champion, trying to get this fixed and changed. Here's the big question, Stephen. Can it stop, or is it too late?
I don't think it's too late, although many people kind of wring their hands and think that it is. But as my book emphasizes and actually solidly demonstrates, by the way, it's probably worth mentioning the subtitle of the book is How the Venture to Genetically Engineer Our Food Has Subverted Science, Corrupted Government, and Systematically Deceived the Public. I don't think it's too late because the entire edifice, the entire massive venture rests on a foundation of falsehood, rests on false assumptions, rests on misrepresentation, rests on really fraud. And that means it is highly vulnerable. And when the facts are known, I think, and they will be, and I'm hoping my book will be a vehicle that can bring that about, the whole venture will topple. It cannot survive a full and honest airing of the facts. Because, again, when one hears any proponent, any person in government who has been sold on this, when one hears that person speaking about why these foods are needed, why they're safe, they have been misinformed, and they will spout industry propaganda as if it's scientifically verified truth, which it isn't. And in fact, the facts weigh against genetically engineered foods. That's why they've been suppressed and distorted so badly, because it could not have survived an honest hearing of the facts at any point in its history.
What about the scientists that are out there, Stephen? Those who aren't making a living because of genetically altered foods. What about those who are just out there independently? How do they feel about this?
Well, it depends. Scientists who actually assess genetic engineering, understanding what's going on, and with an understanding of good understanding of genetics and also the potential, some idea about food safety, and many scientists don't have both, they understand that these foods entail unique risks. And that's why the claims that there's a overwhelming consensus that the genetically engineered foods are safe within the scientific community are false. For instance, in 2001, an expert panel of the Royal Society of Canada released a report which faulted the current then current regulatory system, and their criticism applies today, saying that it's scientifically unjustified to presume that any genetically engineered food is safe, and that the default presumption for every genetically engineered food should be that unintended side effects have occurred through the genetic engineering process, and that deleterious substances could have been created, and that there has to be careful testing to rule out their presence. That report, it was a report, it wasn't reported here in the United States, and the mainstream scientific establishment tries to pretend that never existed. They claim that every respected scientific organization has concluded these foods are safe. That's not true. The Royal Society of Canada didn't. The Public Health Association of Australia didn't. The Academy for Environmental Medicine hasn't. Several other groups. The Lancet, one of the most respected medical journals in the world, their editors have stated that these foods never should have been allowed on the market without careful testing for toxicological problems. So there are hundreds and hundreds of independent scientists, many of whom have recently signed a statement saying they do not regard genetically engineered foods as safe, that there has to be better testing. So it's a major problem, and the very fact that there is scientific disagreement within the scientific community is proof positive that these foods are on the U.S. market illegally, because the sole purported basis for their marketing in the U.S. is the FDA's fraudulent claim that there's an overwhelming consensus within the scientific community that they are safe, and that there is technical evidence on which that consensus has been based. And that's just a fraudulent claim, and the FDA knows it's not true, and its own files showed that it knew it wasn't true when it brought that claim out first in May of 1992. It was false when it was first brought out, and it continues to be false today.
Yet why does the FDA then continue to do that? What's behind it? Money? There's got to be something, Stephen.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, George, the FDA and the USDA and the EPA and the other federal administrative agencies, since 1996, have been given a directive from the White House to promote the biotechnology industry. And the FDA has admitted that happened. It's very clear that that did occur under the Reagan administration in 1986. But what most people don't know is that promotional policy continued through every successive presidential administration. Not only both Bushes, but also Clinton, Gore, and now currently it's in effect under Obama, Biden. It could easily change. It just hasn't yet. That there's still that momentum, and the FDA is still operating under an agenda to promote biotechnology and to put a happy face on genetically engineered foods, even though that requires them to consistently misrepresent the truth and actually lie and to continue to violate the law. And it's astounding that they've gotten away with it all these years. I mean, we're talking since May of 1992, a massive fraud. And even when my lawsuit uncovered that fraud, when I began to disseminate what was in the FDA scientist memos to the mainstream American media, thinking that that would definitely end this whole thing, what happened was the media suppressed that. They became part of the cover-up, the mainstream media. I applaud Coast to Coast for allowing me to discuss this with its listeners, but so far the mainstream newspapers, mainstream television, they suppress it. And I've had, my book has an entire chapter titled Malfunctioning of the Mainstream American Media.
Well, you won't be muffled here, that's for sure.
And I appreciate that, George.
What about a class action suit headed up by some attorney that I'm talking to? Would that work, at least to get this knowledge out there? And, you know, who? Maybe there are damages. I'm not sure.
Some class action suits have been brought. That would our lawsuit the Alliance for Biointegrity lawsuit was not class action, even though we had many plaintiffs. In fact, 9 well-credentialed scientists took the unprecedented step of joining that lawsuit as plaintiffs, suing the FDA, claiming that its policy was scientifically unsound. That was unprecedented. By the way, the media suppressed their involvement as well, so people didn't even know that that lawsuit on its face demonstrated that the foods were not generally recognized as safe within the scientific community. But a class action lawsuit probably wouldn't get too far. They're very difficult. What would be better is actually if more media just began to report the truth. That would end it. If the facts are so damning, that's why they've been so suppressed and so twisted all these years. So it's a simple matter of getting the facts out there. And if enough independent scientists, enough of the scientists who have been hoodwinked by the molecular biologists and other biotechnicians doing this were to read my book, if there actually were a vigorous open debate within the scientific community, this thing would be over. It would spill into the popular press. It would be ended. Unfortunately, most scientists today are under the illusion that these foods have been demonstrated safe. And that's not true. They're under the illusion that genetic engineering is essentially a simple extension of traditional breeding. That's not true either, but they've been misinformed. So, and again, my book demonstrates this as well, gives anecdotes. If we just had enough people reading my book and other books that are out there, there's an excellent website, GMO Myths and Truths, where people can download essential information, essential facts for free. This would be over if enough people learned about it. And as my book mentions, if just President Obama or his wife, Michelle, both of whom are very intelligent lawyers, were to read my book, the whole thing would be over. It would be the same thing as when Theodore Roosevelt, back in 1906, read The Jungle by Sinclair Lewis and realized there had to be major changes made in the food processing industry, and major changes were quickly made.
Well, with Stephen Drucker, author of Altered Genes, Twisted Truth, as we talk about genetically engineered foods, my concern too, Stephen, is of the seeds, the natural seeds that Mother Nature gave us. Are they gone? I mean, what's left if so many products, so many foods have been genetically altered?
Well, that's a good question, and it's a justified concern. Fortunately, there's still a small number of fruits, grains, and vegetables have been genetically engineered and commercialized to date. However, in laboratories, a fairly significant percentage of seeds have been genetically engineered. To our knowledge, those have not reached market yet, but the testing itself, we know that there have been many instances in which test fields testing has gone awry, and there's been genetic contamination that wasn't supposed to occur in the test plots, but we know those field tests have not been performed with due diligence and following all the safety procedures. So there could have been a much wider range of genetic contamination that we know about right now. It's still not too late, I believe. But we have to move quickly. This is something that cannot be allowed to continue year after year. I think there has to be a major, major thrust to get the truth out and to stop the genetic reconfiguration of Mother Nature before it is too late, before it has reached the point of no return. I don't think that point has been reached yet. I think that we can change things for the better, and I think that we have to, and I feel we have a duty to do so. I certainly feel I have a duty to do all I can to bring the facts out.
And labeling isn't enough, is it?
I don't believe so, not at this stage. In fact, labeling, if you put a label on a food, it tacitly admits it's on the market legally. Think about it. If we know that a food is on the market illegally and entails a range of risks that are unacceptable, you don't put a label on it, you take it off the market. And that's the status of genetically engineered foods in the U.S. and Canada today. Labeling would be far too meek, I think, and it would send the wrong message. Now, labeling would be better than the current situation, but knowing what I know, my book could not just argue for labeling, because given all of the evidence arrayed against genetically engineered foods and the massive disinformation campaign that has allowed them to permeate our supermarket shelves all these years, for me to then say, well, so we should label it, would be actually I think an abrogation of my duty, because we have enough information right now. We know enough to know these foods should not be on the market at all. That means we should get them off the market. We should not just put a label and let them stay on the market and allow many consumers to buy them who aren't going to read the label.
One of the concerns, of course, is this major company in St. Louis that employs a lot of people. And Stephen, I'm afraid that government won't shut that down.
Well, that's a valid concern. One way or the other, I think the venture will be shut down, because there are many, many people, many sayings I could give throughout history that truth is there. Eventually, the truth will triumph. In fact, there's an old Sanskrit saying, ancient Sanskrit saying, Satyam Eva Jayate, truth ultimately triumphs. And I do believe that. The truth ultimately will come out. It's taken far longer than it should in this case. It could go longer, but I don't think it will go much longer. I actually believe we are on the verge of the truth breaking out, an epidemic of the truth breaking out concerning genetically engineered foods, and that could be a whirlwind of change, and that's my belief. I know I'm optimistic, but I have to stay optimistic, but I have seen the power, and I think we've all seen the power of facts coming out, and all of a sudden things can do a 180-degree turnabout, and the facts in this case are so overwhelming, so compelling, and the evidence of the fraud so astounding that once people begin to wake up, I think there can be a major backlash.
It probably could be. Had we never gone to GMO foods, engineered foods, we would have been fine, right?
I believe so. They have not fulfilled all of the promised benefits. The yields, there have not been dramatic increases of yields due to the genetic engineering of the plants. And they were supposed to reduce herbicide use. They've increased it. That's well documented. And most of the superfoods that were supposed to have come out have yet to come out successfully. But here's another very important point driven home in my book, and it shows just how out of touch people are with the reality. People are often arguing, well, the benefits outweigh the risks. According to U.S. law, it's illegal to try to factor in benefits when the issue is food safety. One can do that when one is assessing a new pharmaceutical drug. My book discusses this. But according to U.S. law, drugs and food should be treated very differently. And with food, one doesn't factor in benefit at all. One cannot offset risks by potential benefits. And the mere fact that many scientists argue that we should be doing this, and we, in the case of genetically engineered food, showed how out of touch with reality they are. According to U.S. law, we don't even think about the benefits. They are irrelevant when we are assessing the safety of these foods. But even if they were relevant, the benefits have not been developed, and they certainly are not great enough to offset the very real risks.
Jane Goodall wrote a little clip from your foreword. She thinks this is one of the most important works she's seen in the last 50 years.
I'm very grateful to Jane for having written that. She's also written that this book is one of the most chilling books she's ever read.
It is chilling.
Because it is frightening when one recognizes the extent of the risk and the extent of the fraud that had to be perpetrated to allow foods imposing such risk to have been commercialized in the U.S., Canada, Argentina, many other nations. And the fraud, again, as I mentioned, and it bears repeating, it's worth repeating.
Let's repeat it when we come back, Stephen. We're already at the top of the hour, and we'll take some phone calls with you, too, on Coast to Coast AM.